Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is
muddy boots.
It's time to play Q&A, Keith.
Ooh, lovely.
This week's questions include soil-throwing ants, grevillea and silver birch pruning, olive tree varieties, when to water the garden, that rotten, powdery mildew, and more. One listener is planning to move in a few months' time and would like some tips on preparing her plants for the big move. So let's get started, Keith. Question number one. Anna says, I'm looking to plant an olive tree in the garden. We have fertile black soil with clay content. I have done your soil in the jar of water test, and I don't think adding gypsum will help our soil. Are there certain varieties of olive trees that are more tolerant of soils that are not free draining? Apart from mixing in as much compost as possible, do you recommend mixing in sand to try to help the drainage? Are there certain rootstocks that are more suited to these kind of conditions? Or, if an olive tree is not a good idea, which other small evergreen trees would you recommend for these conditions? We do get mild frosts.
Well, that's one thing to take into consideration when thinking about olive trees, because olive trees are from the Mediterranean regions and they're very likely not to get frosty situations in most of those sorts of scenarios. However, there is one variety that I would suggest you try to find, and you might have to do a little bit of research and ring around and do it that way. But the variety of olive is one called Mission. Not Calamata or, you know, Ligularian or anything else like that, but it's called Mission. And the reason it's called Mission is it was an actual plant that was created by the Franciscan monks in California, and they came up with this particular variety, which has a much greener leaf than the normal olive, but it is more tolerant of cold weather. Now, when you get a Calamata that's suffering from cold, it will drop an awful lot of leaves and become a rather open-looking plant, whereas the Mission is a deep, dense-growing plant, and it will tolerate frosts.
Perfect.
And cold weather. Now, the root system is not a problem, because if you worried about the soil being too heavy and holding moisture, then you plant on a hill. So you create a little mound on the soil and you plant in the top of that. And before you put the plant in, you put some Myco Gold, which you can get from BioStim, into that hole. Put your plant into it and then mulch it over the top and allow that plant to grow into its situation, into its environment. And with the Myco Gold, it's going to get through the heaviest of soils to feed that particular plant. And I keep on referring back to that podcast we did with Tim Lester from BioStim.
Yes.
Have a look at that. It'll just explain the whole situation to you. So do some research and try to find a plant called Mission. I know they're available because I went and selected a couple of these for a courtyard garden that I've designed down in Arthur's Seat, which gets some colder areas down there. And this particular variety is going to grow more successfully in those courtyard situations than the normal Calamata variety. As I said, the Franciscan monks created this, and they grew it in around every one of their monasteries.
Oh, wow.
Throughout the whole of California and other states and so forth. So there you go. Mission
for Anna. Okay. We now have two questions on the same topic, so I'll read them both before Keith answers. They were both sent to us back in March, but due to lack of space on our March Q&A, we are reading them now. The first one is from Ashley. Keith, I think I have powdery mildew on one of my zucchini seedlings. By the way, Ashley sent us some photos, I think, through of these diseased plants. If you agree with this, my question is, why is it there? They have full sun, plenty of space, and one is healthy, but the other one is affected. Our second question, which is about powdery mildew, is from Tammy.
Yeah.
And Tammy says, this summer I've had a bumper crop of zucchinis and cucumbers in my small residential back garden. It has brought me great joy sharing the produce with friends and neighbours as the yield has exceeded what I needed. After a hot few days in Melbourne, I was out in my garden giving it a water when I noticed a lot of powdery mildew on the cucumbers and zucchini leaves.
Yep.
I've cut off the affected leaves, but do you suggest anything else? Will they continue to produce, or shall I just pull it all out and be thankful for the crop I've already harvested? So you've got two questions about the same nasty little problem.
And listen, ladies, I also have powdery mildew on my plants at home.
Never.
So there you go. And it's just a situation that is – it's a perfect environment where you get lots of humidity, you get rain, you get the sunlight coming out, and you get the perfect conditions for this fungus to sort of grow. So what you can do is remove the leaves that are badly affected and bin them. Give the plant a good feed.
So bin them, don't compost them.
Give the plant a good feed, so give them a liquid feed, so they're getting access to that soluble fertilizer straight away. And the other thing that I would suggest you try to do is to get the leaves up off the ground.
Mm.
So you can use an inverted teepee arrangement where you've got this situation where you can drape the leaves up.
Right.
An inverted teepee, so that they're off the ground, they're getting air circulation around it. And the thing that you need to keep an eye out for on those zucchinis and cucumbers is what you think is a dear little beetle, a little black and yellow beetle, because that black and yellow beetle is not a ladybird. It is not a good bug to have in your garden, because what it does is it eats the fungus on the leaves. It tracks the fungus onto its legs, and then it moves to another part
and it spreads it.
So it becomes a real problem. So if you see those the little black and yellow beetles, get some Econeem or something out there and knock them on the head, because they are going to create more problems than you can poke a stick at. And it won't be just the zucchinis. They will transfer that everywhere in the garden. So keep an eye out for it.
You mentioned the Econeem. Would the combination of the Econeem and the Eco Oil be good, or just straight Econeem?
For those little insects, probably the combination of the both are the best.
Okay.
And the other thing that I'd suggest you do, and this has worked very effectively, is to get some full cream milk. You can either mix it 50-50 or 60-40, and then coat those leaves with that milk on a morning that you're guaranteed to get sunlight.
A full sunny day.
So you put it on in the morning, paint it on in the morning, or spray it on in the morning, spray it underneath the leaves as well as on the top, and then what will happen is the sunlight will come along and there will be a reaction between the sun and the milk, and it will create an antiseptic or an antibiotic situation, which will destroy the fungal disease.
It needs to have that sun for like 8 hours.
It does, yeah. It's got to be a long day.
Yep.
And as I said, it doesn't matter whether it's 50-50 or 60-40, whatever. Get that full cream milk. It can't be skinny milk. No good for you. No good for the plants. It's got to be full fat cream milk.
Not oat milk or soy milk or anything.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So there you go.
Great. Good luck, girls. Our next question is from Chris. How should I prune a well-established grevillea? I want to create a standard form and reduce it from its current height of 2.5 metres to around 1.8 metres or less. How hard can it be pruned?
I walk past every morning a grevillea that someone cut back, and they cut it back further back than four leaves on the plant.
Right back to the...
You've got to leave leaves on a grevillea. Otherwise, if you go and cut back too hard, say cut back so there's only three or four leaves left on that trunk or on that branch, that plant will die. And so I said, I walk past it every morning, and this just sticks in the back of my mind that someone has overpruned it, thinking it's going to rejuvenate, and it never will. As far as turning it into a standard, that's easy. All you need to do is that. Remove all the branches up that stem until you come to the actual part of the plant you want to keep, and then you need to give that a light haircut. And what you're trying to do, if you're going to bring it down from 2.4 down to 1.8, is you give it a light haircut, and you force that growth back down below it, and then light prune and reduce it that way. Don't go in gung-ho and prune the living daylights out of it, because you'll have a stick that resembled a plant once upon a time. So try all that. And the other thing about that particular plant is that it's a hybrid. And the original plant is actually Grevillea robusta, which is a tree, and that's what they've all been hybridized off. But it's the same scenario. Don't go cutting it back. You've got to leave at least 6 to 8 leaves on each branch and let that rejuvenate from there. Good. Otherwise, you'll shock the living daylights out of it.
Good advice. Thank you, Keith. Now we've got a question from Janelle. I am in Strathalbyn in South Australia. I've planted silver birch trees with the idea to raise the canopy, create a nice understory and show off the trunk of the trees. They have been planted for 2 years and growing strongly, albeit with some interest in the shape of a few trunks due to wind. I guess they're a bit wonky.
Yep.
Are the trees old enough for me to remove the bottom branches, and when is the best time of the year to do so?
Look, removing the bottom branches is not a problem at all. And you can do that any time of the year. You can do it when it's in full leaf, or even when it's dormant. It doesn't matter, because what you're doing is you're creating something. You're controlling that particular plant. You're not allowing it just to be what it wants to be. Mm. You're controlling it. Mm. So you can take those branches and cut them back right to the trunk. And when I say you cut them right back to the trunk, that's what I mean, right back to the trunk. Don't leave a little stubble out there on either side, because if you do that, that's where it can dry out and you get disease boring its way into the tree and killing it. So give it as much of a prune. You can prune up, however many branches you want, and then that'll shoot on from there. In fact, you'll probably get quicker growth out of it. Thing about the silver birch is that they are incredibly thirsty plants. They need lots of moisture, so make sure you compost it well and give it plenty of moisture. Even if you have to get a broad fork or something around the canopy of the tree, get it down and let that moisture get down to where the roots are, and it'll be fine. Go for it.
Fabulous. Mm. Now, Sean would like to know how to stop ants and other bugs removing soil from his outdoor pods, Keith.
Right. Well, Sean, the reason the ants are removing the soil from your plant pots is to increase the size of their nest. So they'll be nesting in your potted plants. They might be doing this by having their nest right up underneath where the bulk of the roots are coming out of that plant. It's a beautiful little environment under there. It's getting a little bit of moisture around the outside, but it's relatively nice and dry in there. So you've got to change that environment. So what I would suggest you do is if the pot is big enough to put into a waterproof vessel of some sort, then stick it in there and then fill that whole vessel up with water. So what you're trying to do is drown those ants out of those pots, ants. Change their environment so they say, this isn't where we want to be. Yeah. And I guarantee you'll get rid of them that way. If you can't put those into a bigger pot, then what I'd suggest you do is get someone who can pull the pot back and then find a way of blocking up the holes in the bottom. So, wet newspaper or something like that, and then put the pot back and then absolutely saturate that pot until the water is coming out and spilling out over the sides. And you might have to do that a couple of times in order to get that wetness all the way through, because there'll be some parts of that pot that will be anaerobic. That means that, not anaerobic, it'll be hydrophobic or whatever else, scared of water, it'll be dry. Yeah. So you need to really make sure you're getting rid of that sort of a situation and get that thoroughly wetted. And once you've done that, those little mongrels won't want to be pinching any more soil. They want to be clearing out and finding somewhere else to live.
Going to the garden where they belong.
So there you go.
Okay. We have another Anna with a question now. Exciting and scary times ahead for my family as we are selling our farm and moving. Over the past 8 years, I've spent a lot of time and money getting the garden established. I'd love to be able to take some of these plants to our new place. The catch is that we don't know when or where we are moving to. What should I start doing in the garden now to prepare for the move, Keith?
Okay. Well, that's the problem, because we don't know when you're going to be moving. That's the first issue. And the second issue is I don't know what plants you're actually looking at. I don't know whether you're looking at deciduous plants, or you're looking at plants that are evergreen, or you're looking at exotic plants, or you're looking at natives. If you're looking at natives, you've got two chances, and they're both Buckley's and none. to move those, because Australian native plants are one of the hardest plants to actually dig up and move, because their root systems do not tolerate that sort of that sort of movement once they've established themselves in the soil. So if they're native plants, I'd be sort of thinking about taking cuttings. And just find a nice medium piece of plant, cut so that you've got the little cut below the nodes or the two leaves that are on that stem, and about 100 mil apart, rooting hormone or honey, and then put it into a mixing, you know, into a potting mix of some sort, and put a little dome over the top to keep it nice and warm and humid, and then make sure you get plenty of water. That would be one solution. And you can do that to lots of other plants as well.
Yeah.
All right. If these are specimens such as deciduous plants that you're going to be wanting to take with you, then that's a much easier scenario, providing you're going to still be there when they're dormant. Mm. If you're going next week, then you haven't got much of a chance. But if you've got a dormant plant, then what you do now, or a plant that will become dormant, is I would get a sharp spade and go around and dig, a spade depth down all the way around that tree, and then just leave it. And then what will happen is that plant will have enough energy at this time of the year to start to reshoot its root system a little bit. And then come winter time, then dig in underneath it, lift it up. You can take it with a very, very little amount of soil or what that's, you know, needed, put it into a Hessian bag. And if you're on a farm, you probably be able to get Hessian bags pretty easily. But it's got to be a Hessian bag, not a plastic bag. Mm. And then wrap it around the root system and keep it moist for as long as you possibly can until it gets into its new spot. Mm. And then dig your hole, some myco gold in the bottom of that, and then put your soil back and mulch it around it, and then it should be fine. And that'll apply to lots of other plants within your garden as well. Get them into pots as soon as you can. Get yourself a very, very good quality potting mix. And when you've potted the plants up, get a seaweed solution happening on a regular basis. So seaweed solution on a weekly basis, not a fertilizer, but a seaweed solution, which will help stimulate regrowth of the root systems that you're already damaged. And then those plants will be fine right until you move and find a new spot for them. So there.
Perfect. Great advice again. Okay, we now have two questions from Richard. Question number one. I have several IBC containers that I've cut the top off and I'm using as wicking beds. Do you need to flush the water out of the bottom every so often, or is it okay to leave it? The water doesn't smell, so I hope this is a good sign.
Well, if the water doesn't smell, then you haven't got a problem. It's only when the water smells that you know that you might have to do a little bit of flushing. What can happen is that if you've got lots of organic matter above the wicking system, it can work its way down into that reservoir, and it can become anaerobic. That means that there's not enough air to moisture circulating through that area. And that's when you get that smell happening. So if it's not happening now, I wouldn't make it as a part of a problem. Just keep on doing what you're doing. As long as the water's got an area where it fills up to and can overflow out of, you've got a great exchange and the wicking system's working perfectly. So that's easy.
There you go, Richard. Easy. Now, question number two. This is a good one. My wife and I have an ongoing discussion and difference of opinion as to the best time of day to turn on the garden reticulation, most importantly over the hot, dry summer months. We live in Dandaragan in Western Australia and have had a relentless hot spell this summer and autumn, I think, with a 49-degree day a couple of weeks ago. I won't tell you which of us says morning and which says afternoon, but I'm eager to hear your response.
Well, I'm eager to find out who says what.
I know, me too.
Because there's only one winner here.
Yeah.
All right. You should always water very early in the morning. All right. I have my sprinklers coming on in my garden around about 5 a.m. And it's and all stations in my system are finished before sunrise. So the water that's been put out, and minor sprinklers that are putting water out over the top of the soil, soaking down through that soil profile. So by the time that you come into the heat of the day, that moisture has worked its way down through the soil profile and are where it's required at the root zone. So the plants are then sucking that moisture up. By the time the heat of the day comes, you're getting hot winds and hot sun, the plant needs to cool itself down. And the way that the plant cools itself down is exactly the same way that we cool ourselves down. We perspire, they transpire. So they lose moisture out of what are called stomata on the underside parts of their leaves. Mm. So they release this moisture, and as the air is flowing over the top of them, that is helping to cool that plant down. Mm. So you've got to water early morning, get the moisture down deep into the soil where the plants require it for the heat of the day. Now, doing it any other way, you water on a hot day, you're putting droplets of water on top of the leaves of the plants.
You're talking about if we're doing it at night.
If you water during the day.
Oh, you're right.
Then you're putting those water droplets onto the leaves themselves. Mm. They become like little magnifying glasses when the sun hits them, and they'll burn those leaves, and it'll cause enormous problems.
But if you water at night, what happens?
Well, you can water at night, but watering at night is still not the optimum time to be doing it.
Because
you're putting moisture out in an environment that is going to become humid, and that's where you're going to cause disease.
Yeah, yeah.
So watering early in the morning, get the water down to where the root zones are. Before the heat of the day comes, the plants have got access to that water. Bang, they're going to be far healthier. I want to know who the winner was.
Well, we'll find that out, I think, because that does it for this Q&A session. And thank you, as always, to everyone for sending in a great variety of questions, and we know we love them very much. So now it's time to announce our prize winner. And this week I thought Richard could be the winner. Or perhaps his wife could be the winner.
His wife could be the winner. We don't know.
Depending on who out of the two of them thinks the garden should be watered in the morning.
Exactly.
We'll be in contact with you shortly, Richard. You'll have to share it with your wife. Many thanks to the team at The Plant Runner for providing our monthly Q&A prize. And please take a look at the fabulous garden products at The Plant Runner.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au. And happy gardening.